Well, thanks, Kenny, for the little introduction there. And yeah, I do have a few recordings on the website, and looked at them and thought, well, there was one or two that I would probably delete, and there was one or two that were sort of right on. And I try to share a little bit of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I had an old timer friend who would say that there's always the pitch that we wanted to give and the pitch that we wish we would have given after the fact, and then of course there's the pitch that we actually gave, which was what the one that we are meant to give. So and I just recently went over 9 years and 6 months free from nicotine, and and for me it was it's a miracle. I think it's a miracle that anybody that's smoked for 20, 30, 40 years goes one day without finding a need to grab a cigarette or a dip or a chew. And for me, it was 43 years of smoking. And I spent a long time doing it, and I think somehow, some way, I survived where unfortunately others have not. And, but I always think of those people that smoked until they died, and look at it like, oh, that certainly could have been me, and it still could. So. I grew up in a small town up in northern Michigan. I was the oldest of 5 kids, and father who was a very hard worker and an alcoholic, and sometimes a mean alcoholic, and mother who was in need of Al-Anon, but never went. And but they stayed married all their lives until my mom died from stroke, and later on my dad died of stroke and alcoholism. So I was 9 years old when I started smoking, and both my parents smoked as well, and they smoked Benson and Hedges when others. If not, it was Pall Mall when others. And they would always buy the cigarettes by the carton, usually 3 or 4 or 5 cartons. And that allowed me to not just sneak a few cigarettes once in a while, but sometimes an entire pack. And the first time I smoked, I took a pack of cigarettes up in the woods with some friends, and all of us lit up a cigarette. And everybody started choking and coughing except me. So it just seemed like I took to it naturally. Maybe it was exposure to secondhand smoke or something, but I just like it fit like a glove. It made me feel good, or not feel what I any of the stuff I was feeling as a 9-year-old kid in third grade. But third and fourth grade, I just like would walk back and forth to school every day and sneak a cigarette or two. And I think some of the teachers that I had in school knew I smoked just because they could smell it. But then there were others that smoked themselves, and so they didn't notice. And my parents didn't notice because our house was always full of smoke. All my aunts and uncles and just everybody in my family drank and smoked. And so that was just a very good formula for me to get away with a lot that I otherwise wouldn't have. And, by the time I was 10 and 11 years old, I was making my own money, and I didn't have to steal cigarettes all the time. Allowed me to go ahead and buy a pack every time I wanted. So, and that's how it was from that point on. I smoked up through the age of 16, having to sneak around. Sometimes I really didn't care if I was sneaking around or not. I just didn't seem to get caught all that much. And that's the age when my parents said, well, go ahead and smoke with me. And so I did. I was driving my own car, smoking my own cigarettes, and not stealing my parents' cigarettes anymore. So that was a good thing for them, and it was a good thing for me, I thought. But I know that I was set apart, even at that young age, that I was a little different. I wasn't like some of the other kids who, spend time at doing school activities and extracurricular activities in school, sports and everything. And the only sport I did in high school was bowling, and you could smoke in a bowling alley. So I did. And I barely made it through high school, and by the time I was 18, I had a pretty good alcohol problem. I couldn't stand it anymore. Drank after I graduated from high school, and drinking age was 18 anyway. And I wound up in a Marine Corps recruiting office drunk, and I was going to boot camp in a week. And I was, in our first few days, we had to run a lot. And I don't know if I had ever run a mile to that point. And I had already smoked for 9 years, and I thought I was going to die. That was really, for anybody that's done any kind of heavy exercise, you know that you get to a point where you start smelling ammonia, and the body's about ready to pass out, and that's what I was saying. But I made it, and after I continued to run at boot camp and stuff, I got out of boot camp, and the first thing I did was grab a pack of cigarettes, and I got on a plane and smoked and drank, and went back home and continued my smoking continued throughout the rest of my military career. It had an impact, I can say that for sure. I always tried to, run 3 miles in 18 minutes, and I just couldn't do it. I got really close a few times, but I just couldn't get there. And I quit smoking just to do that, make that, set that, and make that 18-minute run. It was just, it didn't even cross my mind. Like, why quit smoking? And I didn't think I needed to quit. It didn't affect my life that much. It was, a lot of other people smoked, and it was sort of, something that we did. You worked hard, you played hard, you drank hard, you smoked hard. And, there were a few times, though, where I had smoked enough to where my lungs hurt. And I was usually about a pack and a half, 2 packs a day. But I had a few stressful times where I would smoke 3 or 4 packs just to avoid the feelings. Different things that would cause me to be emotional. A funeral, a wedding, anything like that. I either had to be drinking, or I either had to be smoking, or both. And when it was like that, very strong emotional things would come up for me. I had to smoke more. And I always made sure I had enough duress to smoke. And certainly in the event that I had to smoke more, I'd have at least 2 or 3 packs. Cigarettes in the car, or carry with me somehow, just to make sure that I had enough. And around 1989, I started to have major problems in my marriage, and really started to kick off my smoking, and didn't know what to do. I was having problems with my drinking there as well, and I started to get into recovery. And I had some things that happened to me as a kid that shouldn't happen to anyone as a kid. There's traumatic events somehow I blacked them out. I could not remember them. And so, I had my emotions were so cut off that there was no way I could remember them. And eventually, a couple of retreats, I remembered what happened. So I went about 25 years not knowing some of my own childhood history. And wound up having to deal with that, and smoking went right through it. So, and as I stayed in AA and eventually got to a point where I was starting to come around and finally had my last drink in 1995, I was still smoking. And so I spent several years wanting to quit smoking, thinking about quitting smoking. My lungs started to hurt, and my 3-mile run time was slowing down, and I just found that and a lot less people were smoking. Can't smoke on a plane anymore. Can't smoke in a doctor's office or dentist's office anymore. Starting to get all these rules. Can't smoke in a government building anymore. And it was sort of like my world was closing in. And I would think about quitting. And so I started to limp out how to quit. I had a commanding officer that sent me to a Navy school down in San Diego to be a health promotion coordinator. Part of that was how to get people to participate in smoking cessation programs and quit using tobacco. And out of about 35 naval officers and enlistings, and civilians too, I was about the only one that was still outside on a break smoking. I'd be sitting there watching everybody do some Tai Chi while I'm smoking a cigarette. That would just, if you're thinking about getting me to quit right now, it's not going to happen. I started to experience fear of quitting. What would happen if I did quit? My entire identity since I was 9 years old was wrapped up in smoking. Every single day, I always, and several times a day, made sure I had my lighter and my cigarettes and a backup lighter and a backup pack of cigarettes and an ashtray. It's a good thing I didn't ride motorcycles, because I'd have put an ashtray on a motorcycle, you know. I was just that hardcore. I think I didn't ride motorcycles because I couldn't figure out a way to smoke and ride a bike at the same time. But there were just so many things in my life that I just didn't do. And I know I thought about it. I thought about doing things. But if it was going to interfere with my smoking, I didn't do it. I just didn't do it. And but at the same time, I had this fear of what's going to happen if I did quit. And then I would start to experience this fear of what's going to happen if I don't quit. Now, you start getting into your 40s, and you start to see other people that are affected. I started to see people that were my age and even younger contracting cancer and emphysema, COPD, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. The reality of a nicotine addiction started to set in for me. And when that happened, I wanted to quit really bad. And I was starting to get desperate to quit. And at the same time, I couldn't be myself without my best friend. Throughout all the good times and all the bad times I had in my life, I always could rely on a cigarette to make me feel better, help me relax, help me to cope, help me to get by, to help me celebrate something in my life. And so now I'm in a group, an AA group, and I start to want to quit, and I start to see how it's affecting my AA group when people are smoking and choking inside of a meeting, and some people can't even be in the room because of the amount of smoke in the room, and they have to leave. And they're people I love and care about that cannot be there, and I'm thinking. And I'm faced with my selfish and self-centered behavior, like, I'm glad they left, so now I can smoke. And that really had an impact on me, to see that truth about myself, how I had gotten to that point to where I really didn't give shit how much I cared about you if I couldn't smoke when I wanted to because of something you're doing or feeling or even a health condition. My selfish and self-centered fear just completely took over, and I couldn't stand myself. So I started to be an advocate to have non-smoking meetings in that group. And at the same time, I'm still smoking. I want to quit. I would like to quit. But I'm just not ready. And I started to really get frustrated with myself because I would say, tell myself things like, I'm not going to smoke until I get to work. And so I would get up, have a cup of coffee, get dressed, get in the car, and get down to the first stoplight down the street. It's not even 2 miles away from the house. I look at my hand and I got a lit cigarette and I'm wondering, when did I light this? What was I thinking? It was just so ingrained. I was lighting cigarettes and not even knowing. And I know I'm not the only one that's had 2 or 3 cigarettes at the same time. I know there's a few of you out there, but that happens so much. That now it's starting to get really out of control, as if it was ever in control. But now I'm realizing it's out of control, you know. And so one day I'm standing out in the driveway and I can't breathe. And I called 911. Asked for an ambulance, and then I called my wife and told her I gotta go to the hospital, I can't breathe, and and I'm watching the road between my feet out the back of the ambulance, and I'm thinking, the only reason I'm here is because of my smoking. The only reason I'm laying in this ambulance, tipped in this $1,200 ride to the hospital, was because of my smoking. And so shortly after that, I went to go see my doctor. Both my wife and I, the doctor said, hey, you sound fine. I can't find anything wrong. Both my wife and I said, Doc, we need help, and we want to quit smoking. And so we both got a prescription for Chantix and set a quit date and cleaned out everything around the house and in the car. I went into this quit knowing that, you know, I'll probably smoke again. I don't think I can do it. Other people can quit, but it's probably not for me. But I'm, you know, I went through and did it anyway. And on the first day, I did something I hadn't done before. And despite anything I learned in any other 12-step program, I asked my higher power for help in ways I hadn't before. I really tried to trust that I'd be okay if I didn't smoke. That God would take care of me if I didn't smoke. And I also asked my higher power to help me to not get angry, not to get pissed off, not to put me in a situation where I would get pissed off. Because I knew if I did, there was nothing stopping it. I was going to run to the store and get cigarettes and I'm going to. After about a week, I started, I'd never had a week before without nicotine. After about a week, I saw that, you know, this is possible. This can happen one day at a time. And there were probably one or two times when I told myself, if I want to smoke, I'll smoke tomorrow. I'm not going to smoke today. I gave myself permission to smoke tomorrow. And then when tomorrow came, I said, okay, tomorrow I can smoke, but I don't have to smoke today. And there were a couple times I told myself that, and it worked. It really worked. But I think that, and really trusting in a higher power, put me in a place where I started to come to believe that I'd be okay if I didn't smoke. That, that God could restore me to sanity. Because only an insane person is going to keep on smoking despite all the health effects and facts associated with tobacco use in today's world. You gotta be a special crazy person like me to keep on smoking with all the information out there. And there's a lot of us that do that. but I wanted a better life. And I really, you know, started to grab onto it in the first couple of weeks that, you know, there's a few benefits to not smoking. There really are a few benefits. One is you're not, I think I went about 10 years running back and forth to the store because I wouldn't buy a carton of cigarettes. I just refused to buy a carton of cigarettes. Why? I wanted to quit smoking. So just buy a pack or two at a time. So that if I did quit, I wouldn't have a bunch of packs of cigarettes sitting there. And the thinking that was in my head was just insanity. And if you really want insanity, run out of cigarettes when you're not ready to quit. Oh, that, I couldn't, that just drove me crazy. It really did. And, I finally, after about 6 weeks, I knew I needed something more. I didn't want to use, I didn't want to smoke. I didn't want to use a nicotine patch, even though I had some that had been sitting around the house for 5 or 10 years. I didn't want to even take a drag off somebody else's cigarette. I started to get really willing to do just about anything to smoke, to not smoke. And so I got on the internet and I thought, well, maybe there's a support group or something out there. And when I found Nicotine Anonymous, I remembered that I had found Nicotine Anonymous about 17 years prior to that. And it wasn't my time then. I didn't even go to a meeting. But when I found Nicotine Anonymous this time, I was ready, and I called up Gary down in L.A. and asked him about getting a meeting started, and got to know him a little bit, and he was in, I think it was in, what amazed me was he was in the hospital with pleurisy, and he was still willing to help me out. And I couldn't believe that. I was like, oh my God. You know, that's being of service. And I think I have inherited some of Gary's dedication to this program from that alone. I got involved in meetings on the telephone. I came to meetings here on Bonner, and I would spend hours going through the posts on unofficial Nicanon, which is the other chat group online. And finding ways to be of service to other nicotine addicts. That's what I've been doing. And what I found happens with that is that anything I got going on, anything I'm worried about, any problems I'm having, that go away when I'm working with another nicotine addict, when I'm being of service to others. It just completely takes my problems away. I've been as Kenny said, I went to my first World Service Conference down in Long Beach in 2013, and I've been going to conferences whenever I can. I have been of service in World Services as much ever since then. I would drive to for an intergroup meeting from where I'm at, and that takes about a little over two hours. And I'm just willing to do all that because I don't want to smoke again. I don't want to smoke today. I don't want to smoke tomorrow. I don't want to smoke for the rest of my life. But I know this is a one day at a time program. And I have good days and I have bad days. But there are no real bad days as long as I'm not smoking. I found that to be pretty much the case. And, the other thing was, as I said earlier, I was emotionally cut off until I was about 32 years old, and I struggled in and out of AA for a while. What wound up happening for me with where nicotine was concerned was that I started to grow up. I started to grow up emotionally in ways that I couldn't as long as I was smoking. And proof of that was came on real strong when I think it was about 2 years before I quit smoking, my mother died. And I smoked four packs of cigarettes that day, easy. My lungs hurt for a week. I was smoking so much. I could not handle the grief of my mother dying. And I couldn't handle grief, period. For some reason, it was just, that was a thing for me, that grief I can't do. And a couple of years later, about 5 years after that, I got about 3 years free from nicotine, and my mother died. And when he died, I spent about 3 days at his bedside. And I was not smoking, and the thought of smoking didn't even come up. And I would be there holding his hand and just deal with it. For my sake, and could have been his because he was pretty much gone at that point. But I would see my my siblings running back and forth outside in the January weather in Michigan and smoking their brains out. And me, I was just grateful I didn't have to do that anymore. And so even I guess what I'm trying to say is that emotionally by not smoking, I was able to deal with things in a completely different way. And as a result, grow up emotionally from that experience, if I'm going to feel anything and I have to smoke to get past it, I will never, ever grow emotionally past that. And big lesson for me. So now I don't, I've heard it said that, I had a sponsor one time that said, hey, if you smoke for 20, if you drank for 25 years, you have to give yourself 25 years to recover from that. I said, because I wanted to be 20 years sober in a weekend. Well, it's sort of like the same thing here with our nicotine addiction. I have to allow myself time to recover from the addiction to nicotine. And I can't, it's so when I quit this last time, I knew that deep down inside that it was going to take time. It was going to take time. And I see it today after 9.5 years where I still feel feelings that, and deal with them in an immature way, like feeling fear and experiencing the behaviors as a result of that fear that I carry out. Defects of character, if you want to call it that, I still have them. And quite frankly, I'm grateful that we have the steps to learn how to deal with that stuff one day at a time. And so, I don't know what I'd do without a 12-step program. I really don't. As we say on another fellowship, it's a design for living that works. And that's what I found it to be for Nicotine Anonymous as well. And it's great to see everybody here tonight. And I'm grateful that you're all here. And that's all I got for tonight, Kenny. Thanks for letting me share. Go ahead.